Hello and welcome to our program, Business News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Dennis Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the San Antonio Business Journal here on OWL Radio. Development tidal wave. As new projects and investments target Government Hill, what will happen to the businesses and residents already there? This article is written by James McCandless, reporter, San Antonio Business Journal. The first sign of new development in the Government Hill neighborhood cropped up in 2018. Local firm Gilley Properties International had proposed the Palmetto Townhomes, an 8-unit apartment building on the Interstate 35 frontage road, where the rest of the world meets the neighborhood, and North Palmetto Avenue. Through a lengthy, contentious fight, the project was voted down by the Historic Design and Review Commission after facing strong opposition by neighborhood residents. Until then, Government Hill was a working-class neighborhood, one of the poorest in the city, according to a 2019 study from regional nonprofits and financial institutions that had the benefit of being near Fort Sam Houston. A mile-long stretch of East Grayson Street is the main thoroughfare connecting with North New Braunfels Avenue, where the base's South Gate sits. Now, in the shadow of the transformation of the Pearl area and the lower Broadway corridor, change is knocking on the door. As the remaining parcels get sold off and developed in the Tobin Hill neighborhood around the Pearl, investors are looking for any chance to be within spitting distance of the growing Midtown area. After the fight over the townhomes, Rose Hill thought there had to be a better way to get the community involved in vetting developers and their projects before the process took off without them. She's the president of the Government Hill Alliance, the official neighborhood association. "We make sure that we had developers come to our meetings, address issues and concerns, bring their presentations or site plans to the community, and then we take a vote," she explained. "So we have a process that we've developed over the years, which we feel is very fair to everybody in our community, so nobody is left out and all of their voices are heard." While that townhome project was never realized, it showed what was possible. And as if they remembered that there was one night left to start a school project before it was due, developers have been showing up at a rapid clip. Milam Real Estate Capital, LLC, started construction on the Jefferson Bank building in 2020. A massive multifamily project from Plano-based Encore Enterprises is putting up sticks. Local developers drew up plans in 2017 to add apartments on the eastern side of the neighborhood. The Carpenter Hospitality Group opened restaurant Claudine in a former residence on Grayson Street in the fall of 2022. The Bissame Food Truck Park was opened by local entrepreneur Ricky Ortiz on the same block in December. Austin firm Sabot Development purchased a quarter acre at the corner of East Grayson and Austin Street in January for more than $1 million. In her western side spot for 13 years, 93-year-old Alice Ma Harper, who runs Ma Harper's Creole Kitchen, has been familiar with the neighborhood for decades. Having served in the Air Force, she knows the neighborhood from visiting Army friends. At her age, she said she's not too concerned with how the neighborhood is changing, only that it would bring more folks to the area, calling it God's timing. "There's been a lot of improvement, and there's a lot yet to be done," she said. She doesn't stay open at night, though, and not too many others do either. "After Bill Miller's closes at night, if you ride through, you don't want to come this way," she said, "because once they close, it's dead out. because I'm not here and there's nothing up the street. She welcomes the change for the most part, saying that the types of businesses opening up nearby are bringing a lot more people to Government Hill and shining a positive light on it. She brings up Starbucks, the Best Western Plus that's on the I-35 frontage road, and other chains that have planted a flag. If you don't bring mud to the canal, it's going to stay clean, Harper said. The neighborhood caught the attention of real estate investor Logan Fulmer in 2018 when he and his wife purchased a historic home that had been foreclosed on and converted the two-story structure into an office building. He thinks the neighborhood has done a better job keeping its longtime residents in their homes than other parts of the city. I noticed that there's a little bit more stability with the owners and occupants there relative to the east side, like in Dignity Hill or Denver Heights, he said. Folks have been able to stay in their houses, get their tax bills manageable, and stick around. Whereas you go into the east side, and those neighborhoods have turned over more. Maria Ramos owns Taco La Gardenia, a taqueria and panaderia at the corner of East Carson and North Pine Streets. She's owned the spot since 1990. Until about 10 years ago, the neighborhood wasn't pretty, she said. There are more people outside walking with their dogs, and before you didn't see that, Ramos said. There was a lot of drugs, a lot of prostitutes in the evening, and people wouldn't walk because they were scared. Among the business owner's father within the neighborhood, anchoring the eastern side, there is a sense of thankfulness for the growth that's finally coming. Some have been in their locations for a decade or more. Folklore's Coffee House, however, hasn't been in its space very long. In that short time, business has never been better for Joel Tatu Herrera. The West Side native and his wife opened the coffee shop in 2020. It's nestled in a narrow spot just a step away from the busy intersection of Grayson Street and North New Braunfels Avenue, which has seen a steady increase of traffic since the southern gate of Fort Sam Houston reopened. Throughout the morning, it sees a steady stream of military personnel supplemented by nearby residents. The shop was averaging about 10 to 15 customers a day after they first opened, but Herrera said that one day, virtually out of nowhere, he saw a ramp up. It was like a light switch went on. People were walking dogs, he said. A lot of people that we've met were coming in from California that bought houses in the hill. Then people started renting spaces, and then big-name shops were looking for spots on the hill. They now average 80 to 100 customers per day. He appreciates the growth and how it benefits his business, but he sees the other end of the spectrum. He's concerned about how it might impact long-term residents. Me being raised by grandparents, all I can imagine are these people that have been in their house forever losing it, because taxes are going to go up, Herrera said. They're not going to be able to afford it. There's a few reasons why growth has been slower on the eastern side. For one, a vast swath of the neighborhood is considered a historic district, meaning that any commercial or residential development has the added step of passing through the Historic Design and Review Commission. Some developers have also cited infighting in the neighborhood between the official neighborhood association and a few groups that want to replace it on the grounds that it's too cozy with developers. J.J. Fikes and his team at TJ Ventures have gotten through on the eastern side, redeveloping an office building that the group bought in 2016 and building the Residence at Grayson Heights, a multifamily project that was planned out in 2017. Which sits behind Folklore's and its adjacent storefronts. From Fike's perspective, the work it took to get to the current level of development was not instant. Rather, it came from years of setting the table, which included conversations with dozens of stakeholders. What you're really seeing today is a long road of thoughtful, considerate development on what's appropriate for the neighborhood after 85 plus conversations with different stakeholders in the community, from the neighborhood association to religious organizations to businesses to Joint Base San Antonio to politicians, Fike said. Still, this kind of growth isn't exempt from casualties, says Betty Ford, one of the owners of Betty's Battalion, a military-themed bar that has been in operation near the corner of North New Braunfels Avenue and Grayson Street since 1985. She says the new owners of her building, which includes a tattoo shop and folklores, have decided to not renew her lease. Ford thinks that the growth in the area is one of the reasons her lease wasn't renewed. She says she believes that the people who have lived on Carson Street since she opened her bar would probably not be able to afford to live there much longer. They're building up so many apartments, she said. They're going up fast, really fast. I think this is one of the reasons that somebody's in a big hurry to get this place, because they know in a few months, when all of this is done, this bar is a little gold mine. The landlord, part of Houston real estate firm Long Cap Partners that acquired the property last year, didn't address questions about Betty's Battalion and instead chose to highlight folklores and new tenant Elitios, a pair of longtime homeowners who asked to remain anonymous for the story, told the Business Journal that the plan was to stay forever when they purchased their home in the 70s, but given the recent tax increases, they're not so sure anymore. They said, "We always thought that this would be our forever home, but now we're thinking that the way our taxes are going up, are we going to be able to stay here?" Neighbors all around them are selling, and they feel daily offers from prospective buyers. Another homeowner, Mary Gutierrez, started to notice the changes around her about 5 years ago. They were fixing the streets, fixing all of the houses, building condos, Gutierrez said. That's when it started. Around the corner, we've got the Jefferson Bank Building and Alamo College. So it's prospering. In that five-year time frame, she's gotten offers from $250,000 to $400,000 for her home. When they moved to the house in 1978, it was owned by her brother-in-law. They paid $119 per month to rent it, eventually buying it from him for $32,000. Despite the offers she gets, she's intent on staying. If she sold now, she might not have the chance to move somewhere similar within the city. "I'm used to this, being close to town," she said. "There are a lot of things that are near. To go someplace where there's hardly nothing? Nah. If I wanted to live on a ranch, I would have chosen that." When asked about rising property taxes, Hill said that's not something any individual can influence. "There's not much we can do about that, because the bottom line is that we have no control over who buys property," she said. "We don't know when they buy until after they've bought it. So it's like me coming in and telling you, after you buy a Lexus, that you should have bought a Dodge." On a recent Friday afternoon, Ma Hopper sat at one of her restaurant's tables near the door. As usual, a steady stream of people, many of whom she knew and treated like friends, were arriving for lunch. A woman in a zebra print outfit came in and shouted for Harper. She was a relative newcomer picking up a to-go order. Headed back out the door, she called to Harper, letting her know that she was going to tell everyone she knew about the place. "It's moments like this when Harper really lights up. You tell everybody about this area," she shouted back. "This is going to be the jumping place." San Antonio adds more nonstop and daily flights. And this article is written by Rebecca Salinas, digital journalist, KSAT. The story was published through a partnership between the San Antonio Business Journal and KSAT. Airlines at the San Antonio International Airport are adding more nonstop and daily flights to travel destinations like Los Angeles, New York City, and Cancun. In a news release on Tuesday, the airport said several airlines increased their offerings as San Antonio is expected to experience its busiest summer air travel season ever. The airport is expecting 10% more travelers this summer than in the summer of 2019, the last summer before the COVID-19 pandemic. The new flight options include Delta Airlines will launch daily nonstop service to New York City, JFK, and add a third daily flight to Detroit, DTW, starting on May 8th. Delta will also add a third daily flight to Minneapolis-St. Paul, MSP, on June 20th. Sun Country Airlines will resume service to Minneapolis-St. Paul and Cancun for the summer from pre-Memorial Day to mid-August. The Cancun flight will be available on Sundays, Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays during that time. Southwest Airlines will increase nonstop daily service to Cancun starting June 3rd. Southwest will also add a third daily flight for weekdays to Baltimore, Washington, and add daily service to Kansas City on July 11th. Spirit Airlines will add daily flights to Los Angeles on May 5th. Airlines are expected to add more nonstop services in the coming months, the release states. We're so happy to see these new routes added just in time for summer, like Spirit Airlines starting nonstop service to California next month, and to see Delta, Sun Country, and Southwest all add more flights, Jesus H. Sines, Director of Airports, San Antonio Airport System, said in the release. This increase in air service means more competitive fares, giving more families the ability to travel and enjoy memorable experiences together. City Council awards contract for Hayes Street Bridge Park to J. Sanchez Contracting. And the article is written by James McCandless. City Council voted this week to award the construction contract for the Berkeley V. and Vincent M. Dawson Park project to local contractor J. Sanchez Contracting Incorporated. The firm submitted the lowest bid, $2,534,387, for the work to be done at 803 North Cherry Street. Plans to build a park on 1.69 acres next to the Hayes Street Bridge were first proposed in 2020 by the Parks and Recreation Department. After delays caused by COVID-19, the project received the necessary approvals from the Historic Design and Review Commission. The site work outline calls for two entry plazas on opposite ends of the park, a pavilion and pedestrian walkway, and other amenities. Two skate parks, one for beginners and one for more advanced skaters, are also planned. Work is expected to begin this month, Michael Martinez, a project manager with J. Sanchez, told the Business Journal that once they receive the award, they'll work to get materials approved for the project and start construction. He doesn't expect any delays to the project, but there are some materials that have longer lead times that they'll want to get approvals for earlier than others, citing a restroom building that comes outfitted with the necessary fixtures and materials for a pedestrian bridge. He added that it's exciting to be part of a project that delivers something new to the surrounding community. A lot of people are excited about this skate park coming to that side of town, he said. There are jobs that we love doing, specialty type of jobs. It's giving back to the community. That makes us proud to be a part of it. Construction is expected to wrap up in December 2023. The bidding process started in fall 2022. The project received four bids, according to bidding documents, with local firm Davila Construction initially coming in as the lowest bidder at about $1.8 million before withdrawing. Dunaway Associates is the architect. Long-anticipated Lone Star Brewery redevelopment advancing. Developer is now focused on environmental and demolition work ahead of initial vertical construction, according to city officials. And this article is written by W. Scott Bailey, senior reporter, the San Antonio Business Journal. Nearly 3 years after Grace Street Acquisitions closed on a deal to acquire land south of downtown San Antonio, once home to Lone Star Brewery. Preliminary work is underway to prepare the 32-acre site for an ambitious redevelopment. Last spring, there was every reason to suspect this latest revitalization plan could suffer the fate of those before it, as the real estate was back on the market, potentially jeopardizing as much as $24 million in municipal incentive money earmarked for the landmark project. Gray Street and project partner Midway have said little publicly about the planned redevelopment in some time. But city officials confirmed that work is underway after Gray Street cleared some hurdles, including securing San Antonio's Historic and Design Review Commission approval. They were able to go through those steps, and now they're focused on environmental remediation, some of the demolition of buildings that need to be removed for the project, said Ian Benavides, Deputy Director for the City of San Antonio's Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. Gray Street is using some of the $24 million in public incentives funding to carry out that work. Actual construction on the planned mixed-use development could begin before the end of the year, according to Benavides, who said the developer still has some additional hurdles to clear. They should hopefully be going vertical once they get clearance on the environmental side, Benavides said, noting such approval could come as soon as this summer. I reported in March 2022 that the Lone Star site was back on the market, putting plans for a major destination development south of downtown San Antonio in doubt. Together with our partners, we are exploring the opportunity to sell all or part of the Lone Star District, Midway confirmed in a statement at that time. The $24 million incentive package approved by the city in 2021 was tied to an approximately $600 million Lone Star redevelopment. Assistant City Manager Lori Houston said the incentives agreement would not convey in a sale of the site. The contract is with Gray Street, she said. At one point, Benavides said city officials reached out to Gray Street about its intent for the land. They said they were exploring what was out there, he said. In July, then Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf said the Lone Star acreage was among multiple sites under consideration for a potential new baseball stadium. Ultimately, Gray Street informed the city that it intended to hold on to the Lone Star land, and if it can pull off what multiple groups before it could not, the economic impact could spread further southward. Gray Street Partners managing partner Kevin Covey, whose subsidiary Gray Street Acquisitions locked in the Lone Star site in May 2020, nearly 2 months into the pandemic, warned then that redeveloping the area would require a heavy lift. There are a lot of challenges to that site, he said, but there is nothing here that is insurmountable if we all collectively put our heads together. Benavides said the potential was always there for what Gray Street envisioned to become a transformative project. This article coming up is written by James McCandless. Downtown Soap Factory apartment complex goes up for sale. The Soap Factory Apartments, a group of apartment buildings at 500, 600, and 601 North Santa Rosa Street, are currently being marketed for sale. The complex straddles West Martin Street and sits just east of Interstate 10. Built in 1979, the complex is one of the more affordable multifamily spaces in the downtown area. A 2023 valuation of the three sites puts the Soap Factory complex's assessed value at about $37.4 million. The property has been owned by Houston-based multifamily investor The Barvin Group since 2017. The property is being marketed by Matt Mickelson, Pat and Jones, and Andrew Dixon at Newmark. According to the marketing materials, the 9-acre asset represents a below replacement cost opportunity that has significant value-added potential relative to other multifamily options downtown. Mickelson, an executive managing director of multifamily capital markets at Newmark, told the Business Journal that this type of property doesn't come up for sale too often. "The location speaks for itself," he said, "an irreplaceable location in the heart of downtown. To my knowledge, it's the only garden-style apartment community downtown, so it's entirely unique to the market." Because of its location and the level of development going on in downtown San Antonio, Mickelson said that the property should appeal to a wide range of interests. "A rare opportunity like this is going to be popular with multiple investor types," he said. "It's going to attract the masses." Offers are due to Newmark on May 3rd. Historic Design and Review Commission approves extensive upgrades planned for La Viata buildings. More than a dozen buildings at La Viata have received HDRC approval for renovations. The Historic District and Review Commission approved extensive upgrades to many buildings in the La Viata Historic District this week. All told, 22 buildings have been identified for HVAC upgrades, exterior modification, and other fixes. It's the latest step in the city's efforts to transform the downtown landscape, from the roadways leading into the Central Business District to the Alamo itself. According to city documents, buildings 1-8, 10-14, 16-18, 20-24, and 29 have been identified for the modifications. Most buildings will be receiving roof-installed air vents. Others will be receiving air louvers, while Building 16 is slated for a door replacement. Office of Historic Preservation staff recommended approval of the application with stipulations, including that vents on front roof slopes of buildings 16 and 24 be obscured by architectural elements, that louver openings be as small as possible and painted to match the building's facades, and that the replacement doors on Building 16 match existing historic doors. Marmon Mock Architecture are the architects on record. Local firms Intelligent Engineering is handling the structural engineering aspects, while Encotech Engineering Consultants are tasked with mechanical, electrical, and plumbing issues. And this article was written by James McCandless, reporter, San Antonio Business Journal. I only have a little time left, but let me get into this article. Minus a miracle, XFL headed for awkward San Antonio finish. The Brahmas will likely miss out on a chance to cap off their season with a championship game at home in the Alamo Dome. And the article is written by W. Scott Bailey. Before the San Antonio Brahmas ever took a snap, XFL owners Danny Garcia and Dwayne Johnson stood on the Alamo Dome turf and told a crowd of some 24,000 fans that the Alamo City would host the new league's first championship game. There was every reason to believe then that the city's latest spring professional football team had a golden opportunity to play in that game in front of even more San Antonio fans. Up 15-3 over St. Louis with 3 minutes remaining in their season opener, the Brahmas fans were fired up. Some may have already been preparing postseason tailgating plans. San Antonio lost that game 18-15. It should have been a sign. So that's all I have time for today. You have been listening to Business News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Dennis Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio, and thank you for listening.